Welcome to Idiom America, back with season three after a little summer break, now that the kids are heading back to school. And this is a podcast, of course, that's all about idioms. Probably my favorite bits of language, or definitely my favorite bits of language, because they get at the nuance and the richness, the history of language, as well as its playfulness. And they also offer a window into other languages and cultures. So I thought it might be fun to kick off this season by first taking a quick look at a few unique idioms from other languages. Not only does this offer some insight into other cultures and languages, but it's fun to try to guess at what the idiom might mean, and it gives you a little bit of a feel for how speakers of English as a second language might feel the first time they come across some of our idioms. And it's also fun to try to come up with a similar matching idiom in English. And let's start out with some Russian ones. First, we have ni pucha ni piera, which is sometimes shortened to just ni pucha, which means neither the fuzz nor the feather. And if you're unfamiliar with this one, no way you're going to guess the meaning of it, I think, because it means basically good luck, or idiomatically, break a leg. So before a student takes an exam, someone might tell them ni pucha ni piera. Neither fuzz nor feather. And this comes from back when hunters would go off to try to shoot or trap some animals, which is the fuzz, or some birds, the feathers. And this superstitious idea that if you just directly wish them good luck, I pucha I piera, hope you get both fur and feathers, that you jinx it for them. And so you'd say the opposite. And the traditional response to this was Pashol kachortu, or kachortu, or go to hell, or literally to the devil. And the idea with this, enacting this dialogue, is that the evil spirits that were inevitably listening in would be satisfied that this isn't a hunt they needed to meddle in, and so they'd stay behind. And here's a Russian one you might be able to guess the meaning of. Когда рак на горе свистнет, or when the crawdad whistles on the mountain. And that's a nice image, I think, of a lowly little crawdad living in the bottom of some river who's all of a sudden up on some mountaintop whistling merrily, kind of like pigs flying. And indeed, it means the same thing as when pigs fly. Never going to happen. And another one you can probably guess the meaning of is Делать из мухи слона, or make an elephant out of the fly. A fly, meaning to exaggerate, overreact, make something more serious than it is, or in English, make a mountain out of a molehill. And another common Russian one is не в своей тарелке, which means not on your own plate, which you probably won't guess either. It means to feel uncomfortable with something. When you're not on your own plate, you feel like you're not in your own element. Like a fish out of water when you're in a big group of people or something. And this one actually came about due to a translation error from the French, which a lot of Russians were really enthusiastic about learning in the early 19th century. Think of how much French is sprinkled into Tolstoy novels. And a translator at the start of the 19th century translated the French phrase, I'm going to butcher the pronunciation of this, net. N'est pas dans son assiette, as not being in one's plate instead of being out of sorts. The translator didn't know that assiette could mean both plate, but also mood or state. And so he translated it literally as not being in one's plate, and it stuck around in Russian and became its own thing. And another common one that I think maybe we should borrow from the Russians and start using is Первый блин всегда комом, or the first pancake is always a blob, or perhaps the first crepe is always a lump, as Russian pancakes are more like crepes than the traditional American pancakes. And this one means that the first attempt is always a bit difficult or troublesome. And anyone who likes to make pancakes or crepes can attest to the fact that the first ones are usually always the worst. I think maybe because the pan's not hot enough yet, or it soaks up too much butter. And I'm not sure that we have a great counterpart to this idiom in English, at least that I can quickly think of. There's the first step is always the hardest, but that one's straightforward enough in meaning that it's not really an idiom, more of a proverb. Or there's practice makes perfect, which kind of gets at the idea, but again, more of a proverb than an idiom. And same thing with if at first you don't succeed, try again. Maybe get the ball rolling, as it's hard to get something started, but once you get the ball rolling, it gathers momentum and so becomes easier. Serbo-Croatian has a similar idiom. It's a little grislier than yummy pancakes, though, and that's prvi se mačići u vodu bacaju, or the first kittens are thrown away in the water. And the origin of this one is anyone's guess, but it seems to refer to this idea that a mother cat is not quite ready to be a mom at first, that it takes a while for the maternal instinct to kick in. That just seems kind of wrong or weird to me personally, though, so maybe there's something more to it than that. But let's look at some other Serbo-Croatian ones, or Yugoslavian, or just Serbian, or just Croatian, or Bosnian, or Montenegrin. Depends who you ask, I suppose, as to whether these languages are separate, despite some differences and some attempts to amplify those differences. No one really disputes that they're all mutually intelligible. If something is Bogu iza nogu, that literally means that it's behind God's legs. But if something is behind God's legs, what does that mean? Well, if God seems far away to you, then you're on the right track, because it does mean far away, in the middle of nowhere, extremely remote, distant, God-forsaken, you might say. And we have quite a few words to describe this, some that are pretty idiomatic, like boondocks, or boonies, out in the boonies, or sticks, or backwater, backwoods, backcountry, outback, or hinterland, or hinterlands. Boondocks is an interesting one, as it's one of those rare American expressions we've borrowed from the Tagalog language of the Philippines. The Tagalog word is boondok, and it means mountain. And in both the Filipino and American context, boondocks can still refer to the mountains. This expression originally referred to a remote rural area, but now it's often applied to an out-of-the-way area that's considered backward and unsophisticated by city folk. And this one came about through U.S. military personnel who were fighting in the Philippine-American War at the turn of the 20th century, part of the Spanish-American War. And it originally had connotations of bewilderment and confusion due to the guerrilla warfare in which the soldiers were engaged in the mountains. And so the military started to use this term sporadically for the next 50 years, but it wasn't until the aftermath of the events of April 8, 1956, that the average American heard of the boondocks. And that night, there was a staff sergeant in the Marines that ordered his men to march to Ribbon Creek on Parris Island in South Carolina. And the sergeant jumped into the creek and ordered his recruits to follow, forcing them to march across the creek with him. And chaos ensued, and many of the recruits got swept away, and six young Marines died. And these Ribbon Creek drownings created a media firestorm and a national conversation about how Marines were being trained. Several newspapers and magazines were covering every detail of the sergeant's subsequent court-martial and trial. And the word boondocks was frequently used in the coverage of this incident, with newspapers noting that the sergeant led his platoon out into the boondocks and eventually into tragedy. And from there, the usage started to grow, appearing in country western songs, comic strips, etc. And as for boonies, if you're curious, yes, it's a shortening of boondocks, and it also originated with U.S. troops, this time those who were serving in Vietnam, and used that term to refer to the rural areas of Vietnam as opposed to Saigon. But let's go back from Southeast Asia to the Balkans, where we get the Serbo-Croatian idiom "ne traži dlaku u jajetu," which means literally "don't go looking for a hare in an egg." And you might be able to guess at the meaning of this one, as it means "don't go out of your way to find fault in something." And I like this one, and I wish we had a good American equivalent, because I think we all know those kind of people who are constantly finding fault with everything instead of just enjoying a tasty egg. Those kind of people who never seem to see the good in other people, only the bad. And it'd be nice to have a pithy, folksy, idiomatic expression to call them out on it. There's a decent word in it for English that doesn't get used enough, and that's captious, C-A-P-T-I-O-U-S. And that's used to describe a person who tends to find fault or raise petty objections. And there's also some idiomatic-ish words like carping or nitpicking or niggling that aren't bad. But the idiomatic expression for it that I've tended to use the most is looking for warts. But I'm not even sure how widely used that one is, or if it's just something I kind of adopted. Plus, it seems to lack something. It seems like it might be a good idea to do a wart exam. Although I guess it couldn't hurt to look your egg over for a hair, for that matter. But it seems like there really should be a better idiom here, and maybe there is, and I'm just blanking on it. But I think I'm going to start to use netražid laku jajetua. Finally, I like the Serbo-Croatian one, mlatiti praznu slamu, or to thresh empty straw. And the meaning of this one is pretty self-evident. It means to do or say something completely useless, that has no point or purpose. And the phrase originates, of course, from the old days, before any threshing machines and combines, when people had to manually extract grains from the wheat plants. And, of course, when that's been done and the plant's empty, there's no need to thresh it anymore. And there are a few matching American idioms here that come to mind. The first is to beat a dead horse, or to flog a dead horse. Another one that's slightly different, but kind of the same, swim against the tide. And then there's another one, kind of vulgar, piss into the wind or spit into the wind. Another one that captures the absurdity of continuing to do something long past the point of its potential usefulness is to rearrange the deck chairs on the Titanic. And you could also call something a Sisyphean task, meaning a task that's both laborious and futile. And that, of course, and that one, of course, comes from the myth of Sisyphus, who was punished by Hades to roll a huge boulder up a steep hill. But Hades enchanted the boulder so that it always rolled away from Sisyphus before he reached the top, and so his task was endless. And there's a great song from Andrew Bird called Sisyphus that starts out, Sisyphus peered into the mist, a stone's throw from the precipice, paused. Did he jump or did he fall as he gazed into the maw of the morning mist? Did he raise both fists and say to hell with this and just let the rock roll? Let it roll, let it crash down low. There's a house down there, but I lost it long ago. But let's look a little closer at to beat or to flog a dead horse. This one is attributed to the English politician and orator John Bright from March of 1859, when he was speaking in the House of Commons on his effort to promote parliamentary reform, which he had found dissatisfactory and which he compared to flogging a dead horse. In 2018, the organization People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, PETA, it campaigned for the general public to stop using this idiom, along with other idioms that alluded to violence towards animals. They wanted to remove speciesism from our daily conversation. So idioms like to kill two birds with one stone, or more than one way to skin a cat. And so as an alternative to beating a dead horse, PETA proposed that the general public replace that one with feeding a fed horse. And that's not bad, but PETA could have just gone with threshing empty straw. At any rate, PETA faced some backlash from the public for this suggestion, got made fun of. Stephen Colbert on his late night show opined that society has bigger fish to fry than trying to change such idioms. Well, every language is rich with these idioms in its own way, and we're just scratching the surface here for Russian and Serbo-Croatian ones. After all, estimates of the number of idioms in the English language frequently bandy about the 25,000 number, which, I don't know, that seems like a lot. But this episode is just kind of dipping its toes into foreign language idioms. But before we close it out, let's take a quick look at some other random ones from around the world that I found on the internet by searching the term idioms from other languages. And I won't attempt to butcher the pronunciation of these by trying to recite them in their original language, but we'll just give the literal English translation. From Swedish, we get, there's no cow on the ice, which means something a bit like, don't worry about it. Don't sweat the small stuff. From Latvian, we get, go pick mushrooms, meaning go away, leave me alone, get lost, take a hike, buzz off. from French, the carrots are cooked. The situation can't be changed. No use crying over spilt milk. From Arabic, stretch your legs as far as your blanket extends. To live within your means, tighten your belt. From Norwegian, to speak directly from the liver. To speak straight without sugarcoating it. From Portuguese, to push something with your belly. To keep postponing an important chore. To kick the can down the road, drag your heels. From Polish, you fall from a Christmas tree, to be uninformed, in the dark, not all there. From Mongolian, in responding to a sneeze, God bless you and may your mustache grow like brushwood. I think Genghis Khan and the Fu Manchu, and that makes some sense, I guess, as a wish of good health and power. Then there are all the different ways to start a story or a fairy tale, like the English Once Upon a Time. In Russian, it's straight to the point. Zhil Buil, or lived, was. So, Zhil Buil King. Once upon a time, there lived, there was a king. Most are just variations on a long time ago, like Serbian's Jednom Davno, once a long time ago. But some languages do have some interesting variations. Somali has story, story, a story of silk. Persian has some day, some time. Polish has beyond seven mountains, beyond seven forests, or seven rivers. And Slovak has beyond seven mountains and seven valleys. And then there are the corresponding different ways to end a folktale. English is, of course, they all lived happily ever after. And that's a popular one that shows up in a lot of languages, Serbian, Russian too. Although Russian sometimes adds, they all lived happily ever after and died on the same day. Which is kind of a nice touch. And Norwegian has, and if they're not dead, they still live. Icelandic has, a cat in the bog put up his tail, and there ends the fairy tale. I really like the more realistic Georgian line, way to end it. After that, they sometimes had feasts and sometimes famines, sometimes bran and sometimes wheat. Or the Persian, our tale has come to an end, but the crow hasn't arrived at his house. And this episode has come to an end as well, but the crow's got a long way to fly yet. After all, it's apparently got over 24,000 idioms to look at, including some involving crows. So stay tuned, and thanks for listening.